Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Fly ball left center field. A majestic flight from Miguel Cabrera. And goodbye by the statues. Past the foul pole in deep left center. The flagpole in the visiting bullpen. And Miguel Cabrera gives the Tigers a 2-0 lead. Fly ball left field, hit on the line. It's deep. It's got a chance. And it's gone. A home run. Justin Upton delivers in the bottom of the 12th. Second home run of the game. Fourth in his last four. Into the mop scene at home. And the Tigers walk it off.
Santana sends one high in the air, deep center field. Back is Jennings. He's out of room. It's out of here. Way out of here, in fact. Into that second level of trees in deep center field. And Santana gets the Indians to run closer.
And can pitch multiple innings because he was a starter.
There's a ball deep to right field. Gone to Souvenir City. Francisco Lindor's third hit of the night. Leaves the yard and puts the Indians in front. And look at that big smile. And in the Tampa bullpen. The 1-1. And Uribe blasts it deep center. Jennings back. He's out of room. It's out of here. Juan Uribe with a blast to center field. A two-out, two-run homer.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Extravaganza time indeed. It is 3:09. What's going on? Good Tuesday afternoon to you. Thank you for spending some time with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are, as we like to say, Toledo's sports leader. Jim Cushlin is in the house today. Much easier job of putting the montage together today. A couple of baseball games as opposed to a 52 years in waiting championship montage from yesterday. Kush, what's going on?
Not too much. And of course, remember, I podcast that montage separately. I'm still getting requests from people to get their hands on it. Just go to our website, 1065theticket.com. Go to the Extravaganza podcast page, and you'll find that as a separate podcast.
There you go. And it's certainly worth your time to listen to it. Take the Burnin' River. Was that the name of it? Was it just called Burn On?
I think the actual name of the song was Burn On. Yeah.
Burn On. Okay. There you go. Jim took that yesterday and just kind of put Game 7 highlights and comments and post-game, et cetera, together with that, just so that you can take it from a sad reflection on Cleveland sports through the years to one of joy and happiness. And obviously that's what has prompted all of those requests. So a lot of fallout from the NBA season, which is now over, that we're going to talk about today. Fallout for the victors. And when I say fallout, you know, you'd think that, hey, you just won the championship. Everything is hunky-dory, right? Keep everything is status quo, right? No, not as simple as all that, to be honest with you. There is fallout there. There is fallout for the defeated, for the vanquished, for the former NBA champion, Golden State Warriors, as they try to pick up the pieces and figure out what they're going to do next. They have their sights set on a pretty doggone big piece. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. A couple of other NBA news and notes stories that we're going to get into a little bit, but we are also going to spend a lot of time talking baseball today, as the highlights that you just mentioned certainly would point to. The Tigers win in walk-off 12th inning fashion. The Indians win their ninth straight at home, fourth straight overall, keeping a one-game lead over the Kansas City Royals in the division. What is it, 4.5, I think?
Four and a half over the Tigers, who are at the 500 mark with that walk-off yesterday.
There you go. So you got that we're going to talk about a little bit. LeBron James, by the way, you know when I mentioned you know, fall out in the aftermath, and you really don't have a lot of time to think about it. Now, for the Cavs, they don't have a first or a second round pick on Thursday, but the draft is Thursday. The draft is in 2 days. So
7 o'clock coverage beginning right here on the ticket, by the way.
Thank you, Jim. Because, you know, I mean, it's weird. You don't even get a chance to celebrate the end of this season before everybody starts looking to next season, you know, 2 days, 3 days later, which is really obnoxious and annoying to me. But it is what it is. And LeBron James, in looking back at the season just completed and the mission accomplished and the championship that he promised that he was going to bring to Cleveland when he came back and that whole story, LeBron James yesterday decided it was okay now to answer his critics. And he went on Instagram to do it. You know, he goes into that whole dark mode or whatever he wants to call it, you know, the social media blackout during the playoffs.
Yep, we talked about it for 2 days because it was right after his last set of cryptic tweets and such, too.
Exactly, which is kind of strange. No question about that. But now that it's over, meaning the playoffs are over and the championship is won, he decided, okay, social media, activate. And he did so by going on to Instagram and trolling everybody who criticized him when he came back and did not win last year. And at times last year and this year looked, you know, a little less than king-like, a little bit more like, again, you know, like somebody else had passed him up, Steph Curry, as the best player in the NBA, as the face in the NBA. And so he took to Instagram yesterday to throw this out at everyone. Quote, they say, I'm sorry, they said you lost a step, wasn't explosive as once was. The best days was in the rear view. Questioned your drive, your leadership, your commitment. You don't have killer instinct. Going back home is the worst mistake in your career. He got the coach fired. Players traded. Won't work between him and Kyrie. Him and Kev won't work. Love your teammates too much. There's no way he can deliver a championship in his hometown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But guess what? That's none of my business. Hashtag strive for greatness. Hashtag this one is for the land. Hashtag put some respect. S-P-E-C-K. Put some respect on my name. Ha, 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 ha. Yes, sir. End quote. So that was LeBron James' statement without making it into a microphone. Without saying it to the media, to their faces, and getting into a, you know, a bit of a stare down with anybody who was critical. He just threw it out there on social media for tens of thousands of people to comment on it, hundreds of thousands of people to like it. I'm sure it's in the millions by now because this was yesterday, and I'm looking at a screen grab that was 876,000 people who liked it as of yesterday.
I'm still trying to figure out which is the better trolling, that or walking off the plane in the Ultimate Warrior shirt.
Well, that one is far more trollish.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, that's trollish. That's trolling the Warriors as I am the Ultimate Warrior. So that's specific to trolling them. This isn't as much trolling, and I know I used that word. This is more just, you know, I don't know, in your face to any critic. You know, the other one was specific to the Warriors. This was just to all the haters, have a cup on me. Here's your haterade. Look at me and my trophy. Look at me and my ring. And by the way, that's what he did. He posed for the Instagram photo that he that accompanied that little rant that I just read. It's a picture of him with his head down. You can't even see his face. It's his head down, the Kermit drinking tea, which, again, now we know is none of my business, hat, and the Larry O'Brien trophy. So that's what it is. It's him from the very top, and you can't even see his face, but that's obviously was his intention there. So LeBron just going full-on in-your-face haters mode, and then obviously trolling the Warriors. And I have no problem with him trolling the Warriors. You know, Jim, I
really don't either. They poked the bear before game five.
Exactly.
So I'm fine with it.
I mean, he got punched in the you-know-whats by Draymond Green. He told the media afterwards what Green said to him that kind of prompted the little physical altercation that preceded the punch to the grapes. And instantly, the Warriors came for him and said, oh, I guess LeBron had his feelings hurt. And they had those pictures of him and those cardboard cutouts at game five out at Golden State of him, you know, crying and saying, I can't win and he hurt my feelings and all this other stuff. So they came for him. And when he gave it right back to them and shoved it up their noses, then guess what? He deserves to be able to troll them. I have no problem at all with that. As for this, not a great look. You're supposed to not let your critics know that you're hearing everything. You're supposed to not let them know you have rabbit ears, because it just encourages them in the next time around. If you go into a funk and go into a losing streak, or you know, do one of your 2 week off type things in the middle of the season or whatever it is, it's just going to re-energize them, because they're going to know he's listening. They're going to know he's reading, because he's quoting almost everything people have said. So it's not the best look and not the best idea, but he's holding the trophy, so he gets to call the shots, and he can do what he wants. And if that makes him feel better to say, hey, shove it up your nose, then you know what? Hey, God bless him. That's on him. He's got that right. He has earned that right to celebrate how he wants to celebrate, to cheer how he wants to cheer, and to, quite frankly, to troll if he wants to troll. He's earned that, and I've got no problem with that. What I do have a little bit of a problem with, however, is people saying this might be very, very short-lived, because a number of quote-unquote NBA analysts aren't quoting sources, but they are quoting, well, they're saying, this is what I've been told, this is what I've heard, saying that now that LeBron has indeed kept his promise, he is technically under no obligation to stick around and defend that title. He said, and I talked about this a little bit yesterday with Rick Nolan, he said that my goal is to win as many titles as possible, but getting that one trophy to Cleveland is, and I'm paraphrasing it now because I don't have it in front of me, is of the utmost importance. So let's think about that. That one trophy. Now that he did it, he got that one trophy for Cleveland. He's not under, oh, here's the quote. My goal is still to win as many titles as possible, no question, but what's most important to me is bringing one trophy back to Northeast Ohio. And I mentioned that to Rick Nolan yesterday, and he said, well, that was all part of his letter when he said he was coming back. And, okay, that's fine, but it is what it is. He is saying, my goal is to do one trophy, and it doesn't mean two or three or four or five here. He just said his goal is now to win as many championships as possible. To make that discussion about him and Michael Jordan that has been going on the national media for the last 24 to 36 hours, make that a little bit tougher for people to call by winning more championships. Right now he has half as many as MJ had. He's 31. He could still be doing this for another 4 or 5 years if they're at a very high level. He's got to win a couple more. He's got to win three more to tie him. And even then, he's still not going to be able to escape the fact that it was, you know, it's going to be six out of, you know, 9 or 10 or 11 or whatever it might be before he gets there, instead of 6 out of 6. So LeBron, you know, leaving is something nobody wants to hear, nobody wants to talk about, but it's what a lot of people are saying. And quite frankly, you know, LeBron, until he just comes out and says, I can't wait to sign my max contract because I am in it forever. This is my home. This is Ohio. This is Northeast Ohio. This is Akron. This is Cleveland. I'm going to stay there. Until he comes out and says something like that, that speculation is going to be out there, and it's going to hang over people. Because here's the question about whether or not LeBron would be tempted to leave again. Having accomplished his CLE promise, his mission, would fans be as bitter if he left? And my answer to that is no, they wouldn't. I mean, when he left before, it was after failure. It was after a finals performance in 06-07 that, of course, was a sweep at the hands of the Spurs. And then in 07-08, 08-09, and 09-10, it was playoffs but not getting back. And it was all kinds of controversy about an elbow problem here and, just quite frankly, some really, really poor performances there. And, so he left, and I'm taking my talents to South Beach without ever getting done what you were supposed to get done in Cleveland. Now that it's been done, I kind of feel like if he left, people would be disappointed, yes. But if he left, I think the fans of Cleveland would say, hey, he did what he said he was going to do. He got us ours. Good luck, on your way. Kind of like, it's not kind of like, I was going to say Jim Tomey and Albert Bell and some of the other Indians players from way back in the 90s when they were championship caliber but never cashed one in. But then when they signed elsewhere, yeah, people were mad. People were hateful. They chased the dollars and so on and so forth. But eventually all was forgiven for most of those guys just because of the passage of time. Well, with LeBron, I think that time would be very, very short. because he won the championship. Jim, in fact, I dare say this. If you remember, back when he left for Miami in 2010, the summer of 2010, his first trip back to Cleveland, it was about as merciless of a boo festival, and not just boo, but calling him everything but a man, calling his mother names, calling, you know, making fun of his family.
I remember that game, yeah.
It was vicious when Miami came back, and it was like that for a while. I dare I say, if he were to bolt again, particularly if he goes to the West, and some of these ridiculous rumors, again, are just that, but since they're there and national media types are talking about them, we'll just throw them out there, the idea that the Lakers that have $60 million under the cap this year, this coming offseason, $60 million, and they've got some young players, and there's word that both LeBron and another primetime free agent could be targeted to go out there and play in a place where he knows he has a future when basketball is over. Hollywood. He's got a huge, huge Hollywood future. He's already been in feature films. He's already one of the most marketable guys in sport, if not the most marketable in terms of endorsements. You know, he is Hollywood. And so some are saying that could be the case. If that was the case, and again, my money, by the way, says he's not going anywhere. He's going to re-sign, and it's going to be long-term. He's going to finish his career there in Cleveland, because they'll have more chances to get back to the finals if he stays in the Eastern Conference and stays away from that that meat grinder.
That's the interesting crux of it. If for him it's back to ring chasing mode, then why would you leave the East until further notice? Well, you at least give yourself a 50-50 chance just because you'll probably get there.
The reason would be that if he goes to the West and brings another Western star with him, he not only increases his chances there by bringing that star, but weakens one of the Western powers that he would have to contend with in the process, if that makes any sense. Because some of these things they're talking about are Clipper and Laker related, and playing with Chris Paul, playing with Kevin Durant, playing with whomever. These are the kind of things that they're talking about. And while I think they are all foolish, and I want to be on the record for that, I don't think it's going to happen. My point to this was all hypothetical, that if he did go, when he came back, rather than being booed mercilessly, I bet he'd be given an ovation. I bet he would be given an ovation for doing what he said he was going to do, and that is winning a championship for his hometown team, something nobody had been able to do since Jim Brown did it in 1964. I bet he would be given an ovation rather than booing and catcalling and all of the other stuff. What do you think?
Now, in terms of the bitterness that might follow if he leaves again, yes, it will be so ridiculously tame compared to what we saw in 2010 because of the championship. Although, by the way, if he does leave this summer, that's going to make the opening night when the Cavs get their rings real awkward in October. I'm just throwing that out there,
yeah,
too.
Very good,
because
very
right
true.
Now I lean with you that he'll probably stay. And by the way, when you say long-term, the way he's been going about his contracts to try to maximize value, when I hear LeBron signing long-term, I think a three-year deal, which relative to what he's been signing these last couple seasons would be longer term.
Well, what is the length of the current collective bargaining agreement? Because to me, the reason why he only signed the one-year deal this past year is because he knows the salary cap is going up because of the collective bargaining agreement. Is the salary cap going to go up again without a new collective bargaining agreement in 3 years? Because if it doesn't, I mean, and here's the other thing. I mean, let's be real. If he really wanted to stay long term, but also make sure that he maxed out his contract, you know, with the in the event that the salary cap goes up, that could easily be written in as a you know, an amendment to the contract. It could say LeBron James 6 years max dollars. I don't even know what it's going to be. Do you know what it is going to be?
It's going to be close to
like $25 million a year.
I heard LeBron's could be almost 30.
All right. Well, whatever, because that's what Kobe had that last year.
Right. And LeBron is definitely in that category.
Yeah, and he's obviously in his prime, whereas Kobe wasn't. You know, they didn't know that when they gave it to him. But at any rate, so let's think about it this way. Excuse me.
Oh, by the way, I found it. The current collective bargaining agreement runs through the 2021 season.
All right. See,
so
that's 5 years.
End of June 2021 is when it's done.
So now, can the salary cap go up prohibitively, not just based on a step schedule, but like a huge increase from last year to this year until a new collective bargaining agreement is reached? I don't think so.
Unless one of the giant TV deals gets reworked in the interim. That's the only way
Which is my point about an amendment to his contract. He could very easily add this clause into the contract that says, LeBron James agree to play for the maximum amount allowable by the NBA collective bargaining agreement at salary cap, blah, blah, blah. And it's this amount for 5 years or 6 years, whatever it is. And then a little clause that says, if salary cap goes up, over the course of at any point in this contract, and max contracts are allowed to go up, mine shall go up to the max each time it is raised. If he has something like that in there, I am quite certain Dan Gilbert would sign it and say, no problem, we'll just keep maxing you out every single time it goes up. We don't need to sign a new series of contracts. So I mean, really, it's silly that these are national conversations about where is he going. By the way, let's point out
that part of the reason this is being brought up, it starts from something that got reported originally over a month ago, but nobody bothered to, like, you know, really publicize it. And it's, oh, did you hear LeBron's enrolling his kids in a private school in L.A.? That's where, I'm serious. Oh, and then maybe his house, too.
He already owns a home in L.A.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's one of those things.
And he's going to be making that next Space Jam movie in the very, very near future. No, I'm serious, and that's part of the reason the LA things, but I'm just pointing out people are starting to talk about this, especially today, because they're acting like it just broke. No, actually, that you could have looked that up about a month ago.
Yeah, and people were going to do this no matter what. Look, if they lost the finals, this would still be a conversation, because when he signed the one-year deal because he wanted to sign the bigger max deal when the new salary cap kicked in, people said, oh, it's only a one-year deal. That means there's a chance. And even in the national media, in the national sports media, let's be honest, if there's a 1% chance that it could happen, and it's 99% that he's staying, which it probably is, that 1% is going to be enough for columns, talk shows, queries on Around the Horn and everywhere else. That is going to happen. People are going to talk about it. Well, if the 1% did come true, where would he go? And they're going to say Lakers, and they're going to say Clippers, or they're going to say Heat again, or whatever the case might be. He's going to put his dream team together with himself and Chris Paul.
And it better be a dream team if he's going to the Lakers, because they're still awful right now. Him by himself with the Lakers right now?
No, okay, it wouldn't be by himself. The one that I heard earlier.
Better be bigger players
with him. The one that I heard earlier today on ESPN would be him and Kevin Durant, both going, because Durant's a free agent, as you know, going to the Lakers to team up, where they would be the forwards, and it wouldn't matter what you call them.
Now, that could be a team that could, that type of team could possibly start the process of challenging a Golden State or San Antonio.
Yeah, and then that's why this stuff comes up.
Because LeBron, I mean, the Lakers are just in such a state right now, they need more than just LeBron.
The other one was, and again, this is just national talk, and it's just for the sake of talk. But
right.
After all, that's what we're doing.
Yep.
We're not negotiating a deal for nuclear arms with Iran. Okay, this is just sports talk. So let's take it for what it's worth. But the other one was to the Clippers, so he could play with Chris Paul. And the idea was to tell Doc and the upper level management at LA to send Blake Griffin
and
to
DeAndre Jordan.
It was to send Blake to the Knicks for Carmelo straight up.
Okay.
The Knicks would do it because Blake is that good and Carmelo is, that's not working there. Carmelo would waive his no trade clause and go there. So now you got Paul, you got Carmelo in this scenario, you got LeBron signing there and Dwayne Wade signing there, and so there's their group. That was the group that said they all wanted.
I hope everybody else for the Clippers roster is willing to accept vet minimums, because that's all they can afford if that's the roster.
And DeAndre Jordan, of course, would be the center in that. And well, what they would do is they would accept the way the Cavaliers are. What's Dan Gilbert paying in luxury tax right now?
I don't even know, but it's ridiculous.
Over the cap, it's not even funny.
It's like $53 million just this past season in just taxes.
And it's couch change to him.
Right.
You know, it's couch cushion change to him, and he's happy to pay it because obviously it just paid off in a championship. So those are just the silly things that are out there. What isn't silly, of course, is that Kevin Durant is actually a free agent with a very, very strong possibility of leaving Oklahoma City. Where would he go? Would he end up in a place like Golden State? Now that it wouldn't be like he's just trying to glom on to a two-time defending champion to get
right.
his ring, that they couldn't win it with the roster as comprised, he could potentially put them over the top to win it back and then more. That would be something really to see. I mean, I wouldn't want to see it, quite frankly, because I like KD, and I don't want to see him in Golden State, where which I do not like. And I certainly think that would hurt the Cavaliers.
And, of course, in that scenario, that means Russell Westbrook leaves, and I wonder, and then I would start wondering out loud, Bob, if Oklahoma City would ever field a winning team again, because it's Oklahoma City.
Why do you say Russell Westbrook would leave? It would be his team now. It would be his team.
Because with Russell Westbrook alone, that's a semifinal team ceiling.
Well, where else is he going to go? Where else is he going to go that it wouldn't be? I mean, that's the thing. You know, the whole problem, if there is a problem, and if you listen to Kevin Durant, who made a statement, was it this morning? I heard it this morning on ESPN. But he made a statement something about all he wants to do is go to a place where he's happy and he fits in and he gets along with everybody, et cetera. And if you read into it, and you can, you know, what is he not getting along with somebody now? What does that mean? Well, he's treated like a king by Billy Donovan. He's treated like a king by Thunder ownership and general managers, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe he means fitting together on the court and getting along with his teammates, and meaning specifically Russell. The belief has long been that they are both alpha males. They both want the ball. They both want to be the lead dog at the front of this pack. Pulling the sled, if you will, and we can mix our metaphors all day long. But Westbrook wants the same thing. If KD leaves, it's Russ's place. And now Russ can go to the Thunder. They'll have a huge hole in terms of salary cap space, to go out there and recruit some other superstar to come and join him, who would be more amenable to saying, yeah, this is Russ's team, and I'm here just to help win a championship with him. So there's a ton of those different scenarios that are out there. And the Cavs have their own issues too. Like I said, what to do with Kevin Love? Keep him or look to trade him?
Right.
Do you look at the great things that he did during this championship run and say, we're going to maximize those and have more of those? Or do you look at the deficiencies and say, boy, you really hurt at times. We can't pay a max guy we can't pay a guy like that max money if he's not going to be there consistently doing those
things. And this is a team, of course, if you are going to move Kevin Love, you don't really want draft picks. You need bunches of role players.
Because,
in the NBA, you're going to have to get – the Cavs will get a haul back. It's just a matter of what's in the haul, because in the NBA, of course, you have to equalize the trades. And that's, you know, non-LeBron situations, that's move one. Move 1A is J.R. Smith, who opted out of his player option. He's hoping to get at least the $10 million a year that he kind of fumbled in with bad negotiations last year, and that's why he didn't get that last year. He's a guy the Cavs, I think, need to bring back.
I would be very surprised if they let him get away. Especially, you know, now if they had lost the series in 4 or 5, considering the way JR had played early, not taking shots, not looking involved or not looking interested or not looking confident in the finals, maybe not. They'd say, let him go. But considering how he stepped up when they had to, especially coming out of the halftime down 7 in game 7, and him coming out and scoring 8 quick points with those threes and that huge confident type stroke of his.
Best stretch of JR in the whole finals.
Not to mention the defense he slapped on Klay Thompson. Because JR locked up Klay. When Klay, of course, you know, he was I guess I could just say effective and take the shortcut here, but there was a better word than that. But he was far more effective for the majority of the 7 games than Steph Curry was. But when he got hot and then started to not get those touches and to get hurried touches, it was when J.R. Smith was on him, hounding him and playing great defense. So, yeah, J.R. Smith has earned a contract to come back here and make no
mistake.
That's
the thing, and that's too the thing about J.R. that, you know, you really have to tip your cap to. He's a guy with his history before the Cavs was kind of being an idiot sometimes, off the court issues. Is he really, you know, all there in terms of paying attention, things like that, and when players aren't, what's the thing that they usually don't do very well? Defense.
Yeah,
and you have to tip your cap to how decent of a defender he is. Remember, because I always think back, remember when they traded for those guys last year, Shump and Smith? But Shump still had the shoulder issue. That's why J.R. Smith was in the starting lineup, and pretty much has been ever since then. It was supposed to be Shump in the starting lineup and Smith off the bench, and Smith earned his spot in the starting rotation.
No question about it, and it would be silly to change that now, and I think that's why they're going to make sure that they give him whatever needs they need to give him to keep him there. All right, we're running behind here, and my apologies to callers who have been sitting on hold. I'm going to ask you to be patient. I beg your indulgence. We want to shift gears, talk a little baseball here, coming up out of this sports center. Aaron McMahon of MLive.com, Tigers beat, is going to be joining us. He's covering the Tigers for MLive.com. We're going to talk a little baseball. They are 4.5 back after a walk-off 12th inning win yesterday. We're going to talk a little bit about the American League Central. The White Sox continue to tumble. There's now rumblings that maybe Chris Sale could be had for the right price at the trading deadline. So we're going to get into baseball with Aaron McMahon right after I remind you about LKQ Pick Your Part. You know, we are always looking for ways to save money, especially when it comes to your auto repairs. This is the way to do it. You bring your own tools, pull the parts you need, and save big. It's that easy. Parts from over 1,000 vehicles to choose from in a clean, organized lot at LKQ Pick Your Part. You can always find new inventory for your car or truck. Transmissions, the tires, rims, the radiators. Visit LKQ, pick your part today, and find the part you need. They're always buying used vehicles, too, by the way. Call today at 800-962-2277 if you've got a used vehicle for sale. And did you know you can save up to 90% on your auto repairs when you do it yourself? At LKQ, pick your part. You do the work. You enjoy the savings. Like to work on your car and save money? Then just visit LKQ, pick your part. And remember, at LKQ, pick your part, all parts are always guaranteed, always. On Hagman Road, just off East Alexis Road in Toledo. All right, SportsCenter coming your way. Baseball chat coming up after that. Then we want you to get on the air, too, at 866-240-1065, as we got a lot of other NBA offseason. Now that we are literally done, offseason notes to get to as well, right here on The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
3:43 as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Shifting gears a little bit from the NBA, and it's kind of weird how the NBA season ended and the NBA offseason began literally the next day, meaning player movement being discussed, draft picks being suggested for Thursday's NBA draft. But we are going to shift gears and get into baseball, which, of course, is in full swing and pushing toward July, which means pushing toward the All-Star break and pushing toward the end of July, which is the trading deadline. Who will be the buyers? Who will be the sellers? I read a really interesting piece today that maybe with the Chicago White Sox continuing to struggle and sink, that they might want to think about trading Chris Sale. What would that mean for the Tigers? What would that mean for the Indians? Well, depends on who's got the money to pony up the dough for, and the prospects to pony up the dough for Chris Sale. But it remains a very interesting race right now in the American League Central. Joining us to talk a little Tigers baseball from that vantage point is Aaron McMahon of MLive.com, who's been on the Tigers beat. What's up, Aaron? How are you?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, too. Thanks for the time. Did you, I assume you were there yesterday. Can you describe Miggy's shot that actually left Comerica?
You know, I actually wasn't. I had the day off. But
oh,
I,
you had the wrong day off!
Yeah, but I saw the highlights and everything else, and actually talked to my colleague who was there, and it was quite the bomb, you know. But it's kind of funny, you know. I woke up and saw the highlights this morning, and I wasn't too surprised, you know. We've seen this from Miggy before, you know. He's not prone to, he's prone to hitting those long bombs. So it's we've become kind of, you know, accustomed to it in Detroit a little bit now.
Yeah, but not like that. Not something that actually clears Comerica, leaves on a bounce, just an unbelievable shot. And the best part, I guess, for the Tigers is it wasn't the most important home run of the game. It was the 12th inning shot by Justin Upton, who suddenly is playing like the all-star that he once was, and certainly the well-paid star that they certainly made him when they brought him to Detroit. What are your thoughts on Justin Upton? He's been on a tear of late. Obviously, the game winner in extras, the walk-off shot last night is high profile, but he's been doing a lot more than that.
He had, you know, he's starting to come around, I'd say the last week or so. You know, I remember in the West Coast trip in Anaheim, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Brian Ausmus actually sat down with him a little bit and reviewed tape with him. They kind of looked at his film from the previous seasons. They noticed his swing was getting long. He was getting a little antsy at the plate. And Brad kind of sat down and went over things with him. And kind of after that, I mean, he's really improved. You know, he's had some ups and downs, but I'd say the last week or two, he's really come around, you know, and that's something that Ausmus and company, they were waiting for. You know, they knew his numbers long term, you know, as a hitter, always been good. They kind of knew what they were getting when they signed him in the offseason. It was just a matter of time. And now that, you know, the summer's beginning to heat up and the season's, you know, getting into full swing here, he's starting to come around. And like I said, that's kind of what they expected.
Yeah, I might challenge that a little bit because I don't think they expected it to be, you know, June in a batting average of .237. They expected when they paid him what they paid him for him to kind of perform the way he had in previous years. And right now this is odd because .237 is a great improvement. It's an upswing, as you just pointed out. He raised his average from .214 to .237 over the course of the last 2 weeks. So that's a great sign. But it's still what it is. You know, it took a 10-game hitting streak, which he's on right now, 4 home runs in his last 4 games, for him to get that average up to .237 and to get that OPS up from .613 to .684. So he has still been very underwhelming, underperforming, if you will. But it is the kind of hot streak that may kind of lead you to believe that he can get back to what they expected him to be when they signed him. You still there, Aaron?
Yeah, I'm here.
Any thoughts on that?
I might have missed you there at the end. He's really heating up. You know, I'm looking at his June numbers right now, and that 920 OPS, 920 OPS, 358 batting average. You know, he's been better this month, and I would expect that to continue here in the July, August. You know, he's a guy who comes in with a heavy strikeout load. That they knew that coming in, he probably struck out a little bit more than they anticipated here early on in the season. It's a matter of time. Like I said, you know, Austin's, it's kudos to him, really. I mean, they kept him in the lineup maybe a little bit longer than they should have. You know, there were times where people were calling him to be moved down and moved up or he moved out for a little while. And they stuck with him, and so far, right now, he's at least coming through.
Yeah, so it's a four-and-a-half game deficit right now behind the Indians, who are red hot. They have won 9 straight in their own place. They have won 4 in a row. Kansas City is right on their tails, just 1 game behind. Obviously, the Tigers have shown they can beat Kansas City, but where do you think they are right now? And, you know, we're still a month and, 11 days, right, Jim? The end of July is when we have a trading deadline.
Right.
So we still have, roughly 5.5 weeks to go. But where do you think they are as far as the Tigers, evaluating their own chances of overtaking Kansas City, overtaking Cleveland, and actually winning this division? And if they do believe they can do that and become buyers at the deadline or before the deadline, what do you think it is that they'd be most interested in adding?
Yeah, no, I mean, they've, like you mentioned, they're within the striking distance here. I fully anticipate them being buyers at the trade deadline. We actually spoke with GM Al Avila earlier this week in Chicago, and one of the main keys he's looking at right now, I mean, I know Brad Austin's brought it up several times in the last week, is their bullpen. You know, it's been shaky. You know, it started the season well. It's had its up and downs. Earlier this week, it looked good. And there were a few games that they went extra innings and they really struggled. Key point there was the Mark Lowe. You know, he's a guy Tigers signed in the offseason to a 2-year deal. He was supposed to be the setup man. And he's really, really struggled this year. You know, his ERA is north of 10 right now. They had to bring him out of the game in Kansas City the other day. He had 5 runs. He got out 1 or 2 batters. He's really struggled. And right now that's what they're looking at right now. They need a setup man. They don't really have one. They used lefty Justin Wilson in situations. They've used Alex Wilson. They're kind of testing it out right now. And I wouldn't be surprised come trade deadline time, the Tigers look for a setup guy.
Who's their biggest threat in the division? You got to assume it's either Kansas City or Cleveland because they're ahead of them right now. And the White Sox look to be struggling and maybe even becoming sellers here before too much longer. So who's the bigger threat to stop them from climbing up and winning the division title?
You know, at this point, I'm going to say Cleveland just because they haven't been able to beat them. You know, they lost 6 straight. They've got a home series against the Indians this weekend, which I think is going to be key. Cleveland's pitching has just been so good this year. You know, I look at them right now. They lead the AL and ERA. The Tigers are averaging just 2 runs a game against them this season. So if the Cleveland's pitching can maintain its poise and its success so far, it's got to be them. You know, if the Tigers can't beat the Indians, and I mean, that's the biggest opponent there.
Aaron, Jim Kuslin here, and I'm thinking about some of the things you mentioned with some of the bullpen guys, but on the flip side, you know, last week, J.D. Martinez, busts an elbow, and he's now out. And obviously that's a big hole right now in the Tigers lineup. About the only positive I could think is now you're going to get somewhat of an extended look at one of the few big-time prospects the Tigers still have, which is Stephen Moya. Talk to us about what it means for this lineup to not have JD in there and what Stephen Moya's looked like so far.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a bigger hole defensively. You know, he's turned into a pretty good right fielder. You know, he doesn't make many errors. I mean, he's pretty seasoned. He's got a decent arm out there. Stephen Moya is still you know, working through things, especially defensively. You know, he made some mistakes early on. But his bat's been pretty good. I mean, his bat's been good for a while. You know, we saw him in spring training. He's got a ton of power. He's 6'10", 260. The kid's huge, you know. Right now, I think he's 6'13" since he's come up. He had his first home run. He's actually first big league home run the other day. The guy's got some raw power, you know, and I think that's going to continue. You're going to continue to see that here in the next year or two. The more playing time he gets, I think the better. You know, for him, it's a comfortability thing. He's come up and down major league level here in the last couple of years, but he hasn't been able. The Tigers haven't really gotten an extended look at him. This is the first chance. He looked pretty good at the plate so far. His struggles are defensively, but I mean, he hasn't been too bad so far. So, but no, I mean, it's he's going to be a key. I think he's a key part of the Tigers' future. I don't see him going anywhere anytime soon. And his bat is something to pay attention to.
Aaron McMahon joining us from MLive.com on the Tigers beat, talking a little Detroit baseball. Big win last night over the Mariners. The 12th inning bomb by Upton, his second of the game, his fourth in the last four games. Certainly helping his cause, climbing that raising that batting average, I guess I should say, to 234. Take that back. It's 237 now. And he came into the game with six homers and 28 driven in, so he's now got eight. And he's going to be a big, big part of this thing, no question about it. Aaron, thanks for the time. We appreciate the heads up, and we'll talk to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Bob.
You got it. There you go. Aaron McMahon from MLive.com covering the Tigers for us. Cushlin, he said, you know, the Indians are going to be the team to beat. You think they've got the staying power? And here's the biggest key, or the biggest question, I guess, regarding that. He said the Indians, rather than the defending champion Royals, who seem to catch fire and you know, come on in the late summer and in the fall when it's time to make that playoff push, and obviously they got over the hump and won the championship last year. Do you think the Indians, A, have what it takes to hold off the Royals and the Tigers, and B, do you think they've got the resources in the farm system if they need to go shopping and be a buyer at this deadline to clinch everything? Remember, the biggest wealth of talent that they have, if you will, the position that they're deepest at is obviously pitching. And there was talk about in the off season about trading some of their pitching to add some offense.
Like either Salazar or Bauer or somebody, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously they resisted the temptation to do that with very, very good results since they are leading in ERA and their rotation is rock solid. What could they add, and do you think they have the resources to add? You know, I'm sure they don't want to give up anything on the Major League roster.
No, and if they give up anything on the Major League roster, it would be one of those starters like a Bauer or somebody, and they'll be demanding a Major League legit bat in return if they were to make such a move. In terms of prospects, here's something to think for that Cleveland prism of ours, Bob. Where the Browns are so horrible at drafting, where it is around Major League Baseball that the Indians draft very, very well. A lot of other teams like what they usually do, meaning they should have the assets in terms of prospects to make some kind of a move, and if they're going to make any kind of move, I still maintain it has to be an outfield bat because they're still thin at that position. You know, you're still trotting out, like them or not, the Lonnie Chisenhalls and the Rajay Davises, and of course, who knows at this point? It still seems in a who knows when Michael Brantley will be back, and even if he is back, is he going to be the Michael Brantley that we saw the last two seasons specifically? Because shoulders and other things usually have a tendency to mess
great
with players
point.
For a whole season. So if they're going to trade for somebody, I believe they have the minor league assets to make a move. And the only thing I could see them going for is some kind of outfield bat because the staying power.
But they don't have to. I mean, that's the point you just made about Brantley. I mean, I don't think there's any question that if he's fully healthy, he's going to be what Michael Brantley has been. He has been nothing but consistent when healthy since he kind of became an established star.
But he's only taken 39 at-bats this year, and right now we're hearing it'll be July. The calendar will be on July by the time the Indians see him again.
And
it just keeps getting pushed back.
But that's fine. I mean, think about it. When would you be making a trade for this bona fide Major League bat
you're talking about?
About
a month from now.
Would be at the end of July anyway. So you know, why move one of your starters or one of your, you know, great arms or a tremendous, you know, AAA or AA prospect to get a bat when you've got one coming back for free?
Yeah.
If you just rest him, don't rush him. And he admitted it. It was his fault. He rushed himself back and tried to do too much too soon.
Right,
when he wanted
right.
to get back in, you know, what was it, early May or whatever it was?
Yeah, it was early May.
So, you know, clearly he knows that was a mistake. They know it was a mistake, so they're not going to just listen to the player anymore. They're going to go ahead and make sure he's fully healthy. And when he is, you're adding a Major League Silver Slugger Award winner, for God's sake, and you don't have to give up anybody. So their best move might be the move to the DL to activate their guy rather than to trade for their guy or a new guy.
In that case, if it goes down that way, which you lay out a good argument that they could view Brantley coming back when he finally does as the quote-unquote here's our trade, in which case, Indians fans, please don't be too mad, because we know that the Indians fans have that tendency to rip on the Dolans for not doing anything. So we're warning you now, if that's the situation that they do go in, to try not to get too upset, thinking, oh, it's safe that they're not making moves
people
again.
Are going to cheer that. Nobody's going to be upset by that.
At the same time,
why trade an asset for something that you already have in your system is just waiting to come back.
Right.
I mean, I think people would go crazy on the Indians if they did something stupid
sure.
like trade somebody to get somebody who's not even as good a hitter as Michael Brantley.
Very good point.
Waiting to come back. I think they would cheer that. This would be a time that you don't want them to go out there and spend, assets on something they just don't have to spend.
And real quick, because I know we're about to be up against it. Your original question of the staying power, yes, because the way it's evolved, and here we are, it's June 21st, so we're closing in on the halfway point of the season games wise. I think it's clear the Indians have the best starting pitching staff amongst the four contenders in the Central. So my answer because of that is yes, they absolutely have the staying power.
Yeah, as long as they don't do anything stupid and as long as there's not an injury. And that's always the key. All right, we're going to get a timeout here, top of the hour Sports Center. We're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about the NBA's off-season maneuvers for a lot of guys, for LeBron James, for J.R. Smith, for Kevin Durant, for Kevin Love potentially as well. Where are some of the NBA's biggest names going to be going? Because there are some free agency situations that have a lot of rumors swirling already. And then one of the other things we're going to do, and why not? This is the time to do it. Fresh upon the heels of LeBron James' virtuoso performance, if you will, winning the NBA's MVP in the finals in a unanimous vote. Is he going to, or has he already, caught the legacy and the legend of Michael Jordan on the all-time list? The guys on Around the Horn did it last night. Guys on ESPN television and radio did it this morning. Everybody, in fact, somebody in the Detroit Free Press that I tweeted earlier today, Sean Windsor, wrote this and said LeBron has already done it. He's passed Michael Jordan. He is the best all-around player ever to play in the NBA. I tweeted out that I think this man is a crack smoker because he must be to make such a statement. But nationally, this is a conversation. What would have to happen for him to actually be considered to have passed Michael Jordan in that realm as the greatest basketball player ever in the NBA? So that's a conversation that's already taking place. We'll have our little part of it, too, coming up. Join us at 866-240-1065. We are guest-free in the second hour of the program, so make sure you are right here and join us for that conversation on The Ticket.
Fly ball left center field. A majestic flight from Miguel Cabrera. And goodbye by the statues. Past the foul pole in deep left center. The flagpole in the visiting bullpen. And Miguel Cabrera gives the Tigers a 2-0 lead. Fly ball left field. Hit on the line. It's deep. It's got a chance. And it's gone. A home run. Justin Upton delivers in the bottom of the 12th. Second home run of the game. Fourth in his last four. Into the mop scene at home. And the Tigers walk it off.
Santana sends one high in the air, deep center field. Back is Jennings. He's out of room. It's out of here. Way out of here, in fact.
into that second level of trees in deep center field.
He pitched multiple innings because he was a starter.
There's a ball deep to right field. Gone to Souvenir City. Francisco Lindor's third hit of the night. Leaves the yard and puts the Indians in front. And look at that big smile. The Tampa bullpen. The 1-1. And Uribe blasts it deep center. Jennings back. He's out of room. It's out of here. Juan Uribe with a blast to center field. A two-out, two-run homer.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward we roll on the Extravaganza. Hour number two is underway at 4:12. Thanks so much for spending the time with us. Hey, coming up at drive time, or on drive time, excuse me, at 5:05, right out of the top of the show, Mike Miller is going to talk with the television voice. You know it very well because it used to, of course, be the voice of the Detroit Pistons, but the voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers on TV, Fred McLeod.
Nice.
The new world champion. Yeah, new world champion Cavaliers are obviously making the rounds. They are in hot demand, and Mike Miller is going to talk with Fred McLeod. And that should be an awful lot of fun coming up at about 5:05. So a little programming note there for you. Hey, also a reminder, speaking of notes, coming up on Thursday at midnight, in fact, so I guess probably Friday morning is the best time for you to think about doing this. I want you to visit the website, 1065theticket.com, all right? Visit the website because My Toledo Auction goes live Thursday night at midnight. Oh, you know what? I guess I have that wrong. It's Wednesday night at midnight. This is worded a little awkwardly. It's Wednesday at midnight, so into Thursday morning when you wake up. Thursday morning, you can take a look at My Toledo Auction on the 106.5 The Ticket website. It's a tremendous opportunity to go in and save a ton of money on some of the great products and services from our clients, from our business partners. It's a great deal. It ends on Monday, so it's a limited time, Thursday through Monday at 1065theticket.com. All you got to do is go there and register and then start bidding on great auction items like a $5,000 HVAC from Mojo's Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing Service, a Snapper RE210 rear engine riding mower. They've got things, they've got musical instruments, they've got gift certificates for recreation, for working out, for virtually everything you can think of regarding home improvement. I'm looking at a pair of Adirondack chairs from Myers Fireplace and Patio. They got jewelry. Anyway, virtually every category you can think of, our wonderful partners and our clients are going to save you a ton of money by putting these great items up for auction. Pennies on the dollar is what you're going to pay for some of these great things. So it starts on Thursday. Get online at 1065theticket.com. Actually goes live at midnight on Wednesday. The auction ends on Monday, the 27th. All right, it's not exactly an auction when we bring this up. It's not going to be an actual auction, but a lot of players are going to be available to the highest bidder. So it's kind of like an auction, but it's kind of not. Want to talk a little bit about the NBA offseason now that the draft is, of course, just 2 days away. It is something the Pistons are looking very closely at, obviously. Jim, what did you say yesterday is a 14th pick? Is that what they have?
Yes.
In the first round?
Yeah. Let me make sure I have that right number, but it's right after the lottery part.
Yeah, so the Cavaliers don't have a pick, obviously, in the first or the second round. The Pistons do, but there's a lot of player movement involving these teams that we want to talk about. Number one, what do you think, and we want you to, if you're a basketball fan, even if it's not a Cavaliers fan or a Pistons fan, but if you have
check that, 18th for the Pistons. 18th. Pistons pick 18th.
Was, okay, thank you. So a little later than that, around mid, a little past the midpoint of the first round, actually.
They are the third of the playoff teams, because, you know, the fourth of the playoff teams, 1 through 14 is the lottery, so.
Right. So, and obviously as a playoff team, that didn't, they're not part of that. So, at any rate, I want you to be a part at 866-240-1065 when we ask even a question like this. What do you expect the Cavaliers should do, and what do you think they will do with one power forward max contract recipient just a year ago, Kevin Love? Kevin Love is a guy who, when he was signed, or not signed, when he was traded for, when the Cavaliers gave the number one pick in the draft from the year before, Andrew Wiggins, who is now with Minnesota, They gave that number one pick to the Minnesota Timberwolves for a guy who was averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of 25, 26 points and 13 rebounds every night. An absolute double-double monster. A guy that you just, quite frankly, felt like was going to be the missing piece. You know, the stat-stuffing front court presence to join the ultra-versatile LeBron James and the high-scoring point guard Kyrie Irving. And for a lot of his 2 years now with the Cavaliers when he wasn't injured, he has been that. He's had some big games, some high-scoring games. He has had some clutch shots, some crucial moments, too, including on the defensive end like he had in the finals. But overall, his numbers are a little bit less than, you know, what they were. Now, you can understand that, obviously, because LeBron James is going to eat first at the trough. Kyrie Irving has made it clear that he is pretty much second to no one in the NBA at the point guard position. And by the way, that's a conversation we have to have. Going into the playoffs, I don't think anybody had any question that the number one point guard in the league is Steph Curry. The number two point guard in the league might be Russell Westbrook, who finished fourth in the MVP. And then you get into a host of guys like Chris Paul, who's not the scoring dynamic presence, but who's the ultimate leader and playmaker and assist leader for the Clippers. Then you get into guys like Damian Lillard. You get into guys like John Wall. You get into guys like oh, for goodness sakes, we just beat him. The Cavs just beat him in the conference finals for the Raptors.
Toronto.
The Raptors. Kyle Lowry.
Yes.
I kept wanting to say low for some reason. But Kyle Lowry, you get into those guys are the, you know, kind of the next wave, at least going into the playoffs. Now exiting the playoffs, I don't think it's a reach to say that there are three best point guards in the NBA. And in no particular order, they are Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving, and Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook outplayed Steph Curry for a significant portion of the Western Conference Finals. But Curry had the last laugh. Curry outplayed Westbrook in that 3-1 comeback, a 3-1 deficit that they had to come back and beat Oklahoma City to get to the finals to defend their championship. So you give Westbrook the credit for being the tremendously dominant force he was, but you give Curry the edge for coming back on him and beating him when he had to. If that is the barometer, and I know I've just got off on a tangent here. It's what happens when you have ADHD. Sorry, I was talking about Kevin Love, and here we go. But if that is the barometer, then you look at the showdown that the Cavaliers and Warriors just completed. Kyrie Irving did the same thing to Steph Curry that Steph Curry did to Russell Westbrook. He outplayed him down the stretch when he had to. It could be argued that in the 7-game series between the Warriors and the Cavaliers just completed, Steph Curry had one good basketball game. He was tremendous, scoring 38 points in game four and giving the Warriors a 3-1 lead that looked insurmountable, but he was very, very average in their two wins in games one and two. He was completely outplayed in game three, won by the Cavaliers by 30.
Wasn't that the one where he only had 2 points at halftime?
Yeah, just dominated. Then he came out and had that tremendous performance in game four where it looks like, okay, the ship is being righted. But then in games five, six, and seven, all won by the Cavaliers, Kyrie Irving scored 41 points and absolutely decimated him on both ends in game five. In game six, Kyrie had 23, and Curry, I don't remember exactly what his line was, his stat line was in game number six. But again, Kyrie outplayed him in game seven. Forget it. Kyrie Irving hit the game winner. Kyrie Irving scored 26 points, again played tremendous defense, shared the basketball, something Curry did not do. As a point guard, it was his job to find a way for his teammates to get shots, score the ball, and win the game. Draymond Green was 6-for-7 or 6-for-8 or something like that in three-pointers going into the fourth quarter, and Steph Curry didn't find him once. Not once, preferring to try to do everything himself with the cutesy, fancy, fancy stuff that obviously cost him and his team. So if you argue that Westbrook kind of outplayed Curry for the bulk of the Western Conference Finals, but you give Curry the nod because of the way he played in the 3-1 series comeback, well, guess what? Then you give Kyrie the nod because of the way he played in the 3-1 series comeback in the finals. Not to mention which, he also outplayed him in probably, you know, three of the other four games with the exception of game four. So Kyrie Irving may have just taken this postseason and he may have just elevated himself into the conversation as maybe the best point guard in basketball, or in that conversation with Curry, Westbrook, Chris Paul, and now Kyrie Irving. That is the foursome in whatever order you want. That is at the top of this league.
I can absolutely agree with that. By the way, Curry's game six line, he did have 30 points, but it felt like a bad 30 because he was 8 of 20 from the floor, 6 of 13 from downtown.
But 6 of 13 is tremendous. That's just a shade under 50% from deep, and they needed every single one of them. And what else was his line besides the 30 points?
In game six, he had one assist, two rebounds, a steal. That, of course, he fouled out, too.
Wait. Let's go back. Hold on a second. You're talking about Curry.
Curry in game six.
I thought you were talking about Kyrie.
No, Kyrie in game
six. Kyrie had 23.
23, 7 of 18, 2 of 5 from downtown, had 3 assists. Steals, 2 blocks.
Okay, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. Crucial steals, by the way. And it's also when he scored his points, which was so very, very important. So Steph Curry in defeat. Obviously, you said 8 of 20 and only one assist as a point guard. I know he's a score-first point guard, but again, it's his job to find other guys who are shooting better than he is. He wasn't shooting well, and he pretty much didn't for the whole series with the exception of Game 4. And rather than finding other guys who are, he just continued to jack up shots. That's not something Kyrie did. Kyrie, when he was shooting well, took the ball and scored it, but also shared it. And then when he wasn't shooting well, tried to let LeBron James, J.R. Smith, whoever else it was that was hot, do the damage for him. So I think Kyrie outplayed Steph Curry by and large for the entire 7-game series. Again, maybe not in individual games like game four. I think he's elevated himself into that. I think he has gone past that tier of Lowry, Wall, Lillard. Who else is in that, by the way? Who else is in that? I don't even know if I can name anybody else that I would consider.
Jackson of the Pistons? If we're going in this tier, level two.
I think he might be in the tier below, at least for another year. He took steps.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He had a big, big year as the leader
of
that
team offensively. He can go up to the second crew if he has another year next year like he did this past year.
Exactly. He's got further. You can't just do it one season and say, okay, I'm as good as those guys. You want to catch Wall and Lowry and those boys. You gotta do that again. But Kyrie has, I think, left those guys down at their tier and has joined the ranks of Curry and Kyrie. And I'll be honest with you, I know Steph is a 2-time defending MVP. But if you say Curry and Kyrie and mistakenly say Kyrie and Curry in that order, I'm not going to yell at you. Just because of the 7-game series they just played against one another.
This kind of goes back to what I said yesterday, at least along with on the Curry side of things. You know, I don't want to hear any more debates and discussion about who's the best player in the NBA. That's LeBron. You want to give best something to Curry, it's best shooter.
Agreed.
And that's it.
Agreed. Now, there was a point, though, during this season.
No question.
Where it was a legitimate discussion on our show and others.
Yep.
About best player. There was a point in time, I mean, let's be honest, when he was scoring 30, 31 points a game, which he did to lead the NBA in scoring, and handing out 7.5 assists, and grabbing 6.5 rebounds, and leading the league in steals, and leading his team to 73 wins, there was a point in time where you could say, not just best shooter, best player, maybe better than anybody else. Including LeBron James. Now, I think that ship has somewhat sailed now because of what we just saw in the finals. I think Curry's reputation takes a big, big hit, and deservedly so, for the way he finished the finals and did not finish in defending his championship and playing as poorly as he did and being as cutesy as he was, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's very, very easy for me to say that Steph Curry's legacy, or not his legacy, his reputation has taken a big enough hit, and Kyrie Irving's has taken a big enough leap that you can say, again, that, you know, it's either Curry and Kyrie or it's Kyrie and Curry, and I don't care what order you put it in. I'm not going to yell at you. The only other name to throw in there, as I mentioned, is Russell Westbrook, who is fourth in the MVP voting, and when he tries to take over, you know, sometimes it gets a little bit out of hand the way it does with Kyrie and Curry. Those three guys are there, and then Chris Paul's just a different type of point guard. You know, he's a guy who scored 61 points in a high school game. He can score the ball if he wants to. I don't want to say at will like the other guys, but he's very, very good. He just doesn't play the game that way. He plays the game, you know, as a traditional point guard, as a table setter, as an assist first, score second kind of a point guard, and there is nothing wrong with that at all. So just to kind of lay it out there, I think Kyrie Irving has moved up that ladder and, you know, claimed a new spot on the food chain, if you will. Now, that was a tangent. That was getting off on another subject that was not intended for discussion. The discussion was what to do with the third member of the quote-unquote Big Three. Kevin Love had an underwhelming statistical season. Kevin Love this year saw his scoring average drop down from a career average up in the mid-20s to 16 points a game and 9.9 rebounds a game. That's what he did this regular season. We all know that prior to that, this was a 24, 25, 26 point, 13, 14 rebound a night basketball player with Minnesota. We knew the numbers were going to drop a little bit because of LeBron and Kyrie, but we didn't expect them to drop that much, and we didn't expect him to have struggles in big games quite as much. But yet they gave him a 7-year pro. They gave him the max contract this past offseason to make sure he stayed put. So now the question is should they just, you know, roll with that and say, hey, we just won a championship. He played a big role, not in the way that he normally has. He only scored 9 points in game 7, the title game, but he had 14 boards. He had 3 assists, and he played some spectacular defense late against a guy who's supposed to be unguardable in Stephen Curry. In his final 3 games that he played in the finals, he scored a combined 18 points, 9, 7, and 2 in reverse order in games 7, 6, and 5. So is that something you can pay a max guy to do? And the answer is, well, actually, it's not an answer. The question is was that the aberration? Will he only grow and get better from here with the confidence gained from winning a championship, and he will play into the max guy that we're talking about, especially since he's younger than LeBron? He's about the same age as Kyrie. No, he's older than Kyrie. Take that back. But he's 27 years old. His prime years really are kind of just coming. You know, LeBron's, you could argue, LeBron's prime years have been from probably the age of 24. You know, he started at 18, and he really started to dominate the league in his mid to early, or early to mid-20s, and going through where he is now, he's 31, 32. He's kind of on the back end of those prime years. Kevin Love's in the middle of it. He's 27. He might get better and better with the confidence gained from this championship, and you might say, this is the guy we absolutely have to keep. On the other hand, he might be the guy that's the third wheel here. And the third wheel that is only scoring, you know, single digits or, you know, lower double digits, 11, 12, 13, 14 points a game, and instead of getting 15 rebounds, getting, you know, 9 rebounds or 9.90 average, maybe that's not worth the max contract that you thought you were giving to a consistent double-double guy. So the question is if you're the Cavaliers, do you trade Kevin Love or do you keep Kevin Love? And we'd love your thoughts on it, 866-240-1065. Kush, what do you think they do?
Well, as I kind of said midway through the finals, because, you know, Love and his concussion and some of the bad stat lines, this, of course, came up yet again. And I threw out the notion that, look, we all knew his numbers, the, 25 and 12 kind of numbers. We knew those were going to go down when he came to Minnesota. The evidence was, look what happened to some of Chris Bosh's numbers when
he joined. Just to give people what we're talking about, in his third year in the league, where he really established, I mean, first of all, in his second year, he was 14 and 11.
And that's with the Minnesota organization really misusing him, too.
Yeah, very much so. But then in his third year, 20.2 points, 15 rebounds, 15.2 per night.
Right.
In his fourth year, 26 points and 13.3 rebounds, shooting the basketball at 50%, shooting from three around 40%. Then he only played 18 games because of injury in 2012-13.
Right.
But he averaged in the 18 games he played 18 points and 14 rebounds.
Right.
And then his last year in Minnesota before Cleveland traded for him, 26.1 and 12.5. I mean, his numbers, his ability is just obvious.
And if you're one of those teams that wants to try to trade for Love, because we know those rumors are going to be persisting for the next few weeks, you're thinking, well, we're getting Kevin Love to be the number one option. We're going to get those Minnesota numbers again.
Exactly right. When he doesn't have to share the ball.
Yeah.
Or not share it, but when he doesn't have to basically be the third option behind a LeBron and a Kyrie, you come to almost any other team, almost, obviously. If he goes to the Thunder, he's still going to be behind, you know, guys like Durant and,
right.
And Westbrook, just to throw a team out there. But, yeah, to almost every other team, he would be a first or a first, you know, a 1B scoring and rebounding option.
Right. But in terms of Love specifically, and again, like I said, we knew this was going to come up, and it did during the finals in these last couple of weeks because of some of his poor performances, et cetera. And I kept throwing out there, Bob, that, you know, this wasn't all that much of an issue in the first regular seasons. We knew his numbers were going to go down. Yeah, you have the cryptic tweets, fit in, not fit on, all that other stuff. Part of that is misusing. It's clear to me in regular season situations, when you start Kevin Love offensively, you start him in the doggone block and then move out. This doesn't seem to be rocket science, but they keep misusing it. But maybe, and he was fine this year in the first three rounds of the playoffs. The only two bad games I thought Kevin Love had in the first three rounds of the playoffs were those two losses in Toronto in the East Finals. Maybe the Warriors specifically, just not that good of a matchup when you have Kevin Love on the floor. Though he put some of that to rest with his 14 boards and that outstanding defense in that last possession.
Yeah, he did.
But maybe it's just specifically the Warriors, in which case, why tinker with it too much? Because if you trade away Love, you're not getting the same kind of player back. You're either getting picks, which the Cavs don't want. They're not in that kind of mode. That's why a third team will have to be involved to get the picks. And you're going to get 2 to 4 role-type players, because salaries, of course, in NBA trades have to basically equal out. So you're sending Love away to get 3 or 4 role-type players. Maybe they would put Channing Frye in a starting lineup, because for what it's worth, remember when they acquired him, even though he was a no-show basically in these finals, again, possibly a matchup thing. He signed at $7.8 million for next year and the year after. So Channing Frye is going to be in Cleveland for the next two seasons. Maybe they go with the role players and put a guy like Frye in there. I don't know, but I'm still on the mode of don't trade Love. And I guess if you trade him, at least the Cavs will get some kind of big package for it just by the how NBA trades have to work.
Yeah, the question is would the package they get, and, you know,
it would have to be very specific in the players and the roles they would have to be on this kind of team.
How are they going to fit any better than a guy like Kevin Love would fit?
And because, like, a team like one of the big rumored teams is Boston. I remember Kevin Love even visited them the two summers ago, and they got picks out the wazoo, as we know, but the Cavs don't need them. That's where a third team coming in. Any trade involving Love, I'm almost guaranteeing right now, is going to have to be a three-team kind of trade.
I would think so, too. And my hope would be, by the way, as we just kind of kick this stuff around, that they do just say, you know what, bad matchup here and there. And also, you know, periods of time where it looked like he was more absent from the offense than, you know, than he should have been.
I think that's coaching and play calling, mostly, on that last part.
That those are anomalies, not, you know, they're the outliers, not the norm. And that the fact that, again, they just won their championship, I think is going to make so much of a difference in their mood, in their mindset, in their willingness to give a little bit, to get a little bit from one another. And I'm talking about LeBron and Kyrie, too, mostly. A lot of times, what did we hear about this team during the season was from some of the analysts that we talk to on a regular basis. We heard a lot of people say that even in victory, these guys don't look like they're having fun. That was a common theme.
Especially when Blatt was still coaching.
No, but even after.
But even after.
Even after. They just don't look, nothing looked easy, nothing looked comfortable, nothing looked
right.
Like, you know, when the game is over, man, we're all smiles and we're hugs and we're arm in arm on our way to the locker room and, you know, we got this, we are one unit, blah, blah, blah. That it really seemed very forced and nobody looked like they're having a lot of fun.
Right.
And that, of course, is because I think the pressure was on. That was so hard. The pressure was so heavy on these guys to win a championship and to prove everything that, you know, people had believed about them. Now that is gone and they've already done it, I can just see the load off of Kevin Love's shoulders being so, so much easier for him to deal with. And the same thing with LeBron. And I can see these guys really, truly becoming, you know,
they kept saying through the final that this was the closest team he's ever been on. LeBron said that, and others said that too. This goes back to the whole is LeBron really going to leave now that mission accomplished a story that I'm sure we'll have to kick around for at least another 12 days before free agency starts on July 1st. Real quick, if I may, you know, looking through all this, because there's other obviously other factors here, and you know, assuming LeBron doesn't bolt for somewhere, they're not going to be able to sign a lot of guys that are not already on this team, as we know, due to their tax situations. One thing I will throw out there, Love, Irving, Thompson, Shump, Channing Frye, for what it's worth, Sasha Cown, those are all players who have guaranteed contracts at least through next year, so all of them are going to be back. Jordan McRae has a team option, but it's for under $1 million, so I almost expect them to pick that up. Then you had, and they were weird contract things, because remember I had a Sports Center right smack in the middle of the, it was the night of game six last Thursday, that for some reason, that was the deadline day for both J.R. Smith and Mo Williams to accept or decline their player options. JR, as we know, elected no, but for what it's worth, Mo Williams did pick his up, so Mo Williams will still be on this team. Mozgov, James Jones, Richard Jefferson retired. Those two are unrestricted free agents. Dele apparently has a weird quirk. He's still a restricted free agent for this offseason. And then Dante Jones is an unrestricted. So that's kind of where the current roster stands at this moment. And outside of bringing some of like LeBron back and JR or maybe Dele or somebody, everything else is going to have to be your James Jones, Richard Jefferson mid-levels or vet minimums because they're already maxed out.
And they're going to have a lot of guys who are willing to do that because they want to come and play, they think, for a championship.
Yep, and especially mean,
Richard
if it's
Jefferson
the same
did the greatest thing in the world. He just got what he wanted and got out. You know, before
and
he retired,
played so well. That's the interesting thing, because if LeBron stays, you're going to need that vet minimum guy who's in theory job title is you're out there for when LeBron needs a breather. It was clear last season that Sean Marion just didn't have anything left in the tank. Richard Jefferson did, so they're one for two on those types of players. They'll be able to find somebody at that vet minimum. The question then will he be another Jefferson or will he be another Matrix?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a very good question. And they're going to have a lot of guys lining up for that role who are willing to play for the veterans minimum and to come back and just do those things. And that's going to be an awful lot of fun to watch. All right, I wanted to get our time out of here because we need it for bottom of the hour Sports Center. Then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about comparisons, not necessarily now comparing Kyrie to Steph Curry or anything else, but what they're doing on Around the Horn, what they were doing on TV this morning, what they were doing on national radio this morning is, did LeBron James' MVP performance, and he now joins, by the way, only three other guys as having three titles and four league MVPs in the regular season, and they are the who's who of basketball greatness. Now that he has also done that and won his third title, and he did it by leading something Jordan never did in the finals. He never led his team or both teams in every single statistical category, points, rebounds, assists, and blocks and steals. Now that he did that, is it time to start calling him, or at least having the discussion that he might be, better than Michael Jordan when it's all said and done? This is what they're doing on national conversations, national shows. It's not something I'm comfortable doing, but I feel the need to answer those shows on our little local level. That's what we want to do, and I'm going to have some comparative points for you when we come back, and hopefully you will have some thoughts on it too. So if you do, join us, 866-240-1065 right here on the ticket.
6240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Yeah, you just heard that reminder about the webpage, and you can podcast all of our shows and download them later on and listen to them at your leisure, both on the Extravaganza and Drive Time with Mike Miller. But I would advise not waiting to podcast Drive Time today. Listen to it live. Mike Miller is going to talk with Fred McLeod, who is there for every single step of the journey on the way to a world championship for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Former voice of the Pistons, of course. Now, how many years has it been that he's since he's taken over as the voice for the Cavaliers?
Well, I think it was LeBron's third year in the league, I want to say.
No, that not that long, has it?
I think it's been that long because,
wow, really?
Well, think about it, because it was It was Michael Ragai who was doing the games as LeBron's rookie and I believe sophomore year, which were the only 2 years in LeBron's career that it was still known as Gund Arena, because that was the time when Dan Gilbert bought the team from Gordon Gund. And that's when they changed the name and they changed the announcers. So I think it was the first playoff year,
2006, 2007 season.
Okay, so that would be his fourth year in the league. So I was off by one.
Yep, you were. I thought it was later than that even. I thought Greg had been doing him for longer than that. But at any rate, Fred McLeod, who, of course, was with the Pistons for a number of years with Dan Gilbert, brought over by Dan Gilbert to be the voice of the Cavaliers, and now, of course, he called an NBA championship team. All right. Now, speaking of that championship, this is just something that I didn't mean to be really rude about it when I tweeted that this guy must be outside of his mind. I think he really was. Feature writer for the Free Press, Detroit Free Press, Sean Windsor, wrote an article today that I read. And I skimmed. I didn't even read because I've heard 99% of the arguments before. And I just dismiss him out of hand because of so many reasons. This is the inevitable LeBron James versus Michael Jordan argument. Sean Windsor of the Free Press wrote that the argument is over, that LeBron James has proven to be, based on his performance in this particular NBA Finals, has proven to be the greatest basketball player of all time. Actually, the headline, and this story just came out yesterday, late last night, the headline is Cavaliers comeback proves LeBron James is best baller ever. And it starts with the cult of Michael Jordan took a hit Sunday night. Not from within the cult, of course. That would require perspective. And when it comes to Jordan, we don't have much. The hit came from without, from those of us who view LeBron James as the better overall player. That's pretty much all I needed to read to realize, okay, this is going to be just an article of trash. Now, it's not the only one, of course. Because they're having this conversation last night or yesterday on around the horn on ESPN. And a number of the reporters there were taking the same exact approach. And I have to say what I have said many, many times about this. Once again, members of local and national media falling victim to the prisoner of the moment trap. And that's exactly what it is. We're watching something now, and it's so good, it has to be better than the best of all time. We see it time and time again. And it's criminal to me. It's unfair to both players. It's unfair to LeBron James to put that down right now, considering he's still 31 and has a lot of career left. What if he goes out there in the next 3 or 4 years and falls off the planet? What if he goes out there and can't hit a jump shot anymore? He's slower and can't get to the basket as much. His scoring average goes from 25 to 18 a game. He makes the first round of the playoffs the next 3 years and gets exited. And we've already declared him to be better than Jordan all time. It's unfair to do that. But it's also unfair to Michael Jordan because he hasn't played in 20 years. We haven't seen his greatness. And I don't know, it's not exactly 20. We haven't seen his greatness for so long that we forget what it's like. And we forget what it was like to watch him at the peak of his athleticism. Athleticism that, quite frankly, we have never seen before. And I still don't know that we have seen since. It's not fair to the guy that revolutionized the way this game is played. It's not fair to the guy, Michael Jordan, who... Let's be honest, when he retired, there wasn't even a discussion as to whether it was him or Bird, him or Magic, him or Robertson, him or Kareem, him or Russell, or any of the other names that are frequently associated in conversations with the best players of all time. It was just accepted. It was Michael Jordan. And the reason for that goes so far beyond stats, but the stats themselves tell so much of the story. I mean, for example, LeBron James, and this again is also unfair to do to LeBron James today, right now, because he just won a championship Sunday. He's going to have a parade tomorrow. And for the guys on TV and writing for the Free Press to do this now and to make this comparison now is, again, just completely wrong. Just enjoy the moment and let him enjoy the moment. It's also really unfair to do to Cleveland fans, too, because Cleveland fans have a personal hatred for Michael Jordan because of the shot, which used to be the shot. And now it was the other shot, because the shot is Kyrie Irving's three-point dagger to win their first world championship. But it's unfair to Michael Jordan, too, because for all of the reasons I just outlined. But statistically speaking, LeBron James has had, what, three seasons, I believe, of averaging at least 30 points a game, something that Michael Jordan did eight times. And I heard this stat this morning, too, on ESPN television. In the postseason, LeBron James has averaged 30 points a game or more for a postseason, I want to say two or three times. Michael Jordan did it 10 times, including one series in which he averaged over 40 points a game for the entire season. And if you say to yourself, yeah, but Mike was just a scorer, LeBron does all those other things too. Look at the assists and the rebounds. And again, people forget who we're talking about here. Michael Jordan in 1988-89, his fifth season, one of his best, but maybe not his best. I mean, his third season, he was 37 points a game, but also managed to hand out five assists and grab five rebounds a game. In his fourth year, 35 points, six assists, 5.5 rebounds. In his fifth year, 32.5 points, eight rebounds and eight assists. Clearly, this is from a two guard, not a 6'9", 250-pound forward getting eight rebounds a game. Shooting from a two guard's position, 53% from the floor on 24 shots a night. 53%. Those are Shaq-type scoring numbers from dunk range. Along with eight rebounds and eight assists. 33.6 points the next year, 6.9 rebounds, 5.2 assists. I mean, to say that he was, somebody's tweeting me today saying, you don't understand. You know, LeBron is a complete player, scoring rebounds, assists, blocks, and steals. Michael was just a scorer. Are you kidding me? How quickly people forget the greatness, because a decade and a half have gone by since Michael Jordan last played the game at his level. And I'm not talking about when he came back a third time in 01-02 for the Washington Wizards, and then the next year. I'm talking about when he played the game at his level when he retired in 98, which, by the way, in his last season, 28.7, 5.8, and 3.5, just if you're wondering.
But by the way, real quick, speaking of 98, and for those who hadn't heard yet, Sunday's Game 7 was the most watched NBA game since that famed Game 6 in 98.
I saw that stat, too. And a lot of people are calling, by the way, that series the greatest series that the finals have ever produced, and that Game 7, one of the greatest games in finals history. You won't hear me argue about that.
No, me either.
I'll tell you what, and not only that,
and that's not personal local bias in there.
No, not at all. Not only that, Kyrie's shot to win it, one of the greatest shots in the history of the finals. Again, given the circumstances, everything surrounding it, the move he had to make to give himself the space to step back and to even have the guts to take that, let alone drain that, unreal. But now getting back to postseason, which again, and this is where it really begins and ends, this ridiculous conversation that people have. The person who was on Twitter telling me that LeBron is better than MJ because is pointing out that in his finals appearances, were the first time they made it with the Spurs, against the Spurs, I should say, in 06-07, well, they just weren't ready. Then he said, Miami 2 out of 4 with Wade and Bosch. And then last year, his guys were injured, and this year he won it. And my point to all of that was, you could have stopped the conversation with just 2 out of 4 with Miami with Wade and Bosch. Wade and Bosch are easily as good as any pair of teammates Jordan had in any of his runs. Now, am I saying that Wade is exactly Scottie Pippen? No, but I mean, they're both going to be Hall of Famers. And am I saying Chris Bosch is exactly Dennis Rodman? No. But he is a regular consensus all-star, of course, when he's healthy and he's got his heart problem or blood clot and the lung problems and everything else now. But we're talking about a very, very talented roster. He made 4 finals with and only won 2 of them. And one of them was awful. The one he lost to the Dallas Mavericks in 2011, he was awful. And quite frankly, in another one, the one against the Thunder, against the Thunder, it took a Ray out. Was it the Thunder series?
No, that was the second title. That was the seven-game series against the Spurs that he won.
That's right.
Which incidentally is the only time the Spurs have ever lost a finals, by the way.
The Spurs were about to close them out in Game 6 and give LeBron another finals loss, and it was the Ray Allen dagger three from the corner that pushed that to a Game 7. I mean, let's just be honest. Michael got to the show 6 times. Michael won it 6 times. And guess what else Michael didn't do? He never even let a series get to a Game 7. When there was a closeout opportunity, he closed it out, period. And the numbers are more astounding than the numbers I just gave you from the regular season in the finals. No, LeBron James is on his way to being one of the top 5 players of all time by the time it's over. But to say he is better than Michael Jordan, or ever will be, is something that I don't think is humanly possible. It's not possible for anybody.
I'm with you on that.
We're 6-for-6 with 6 MVPs, along with everything else that I just said about the regular season. I'm sorry. It's unfair for LeBron, but it is what it is. He's going to be fighting an uphill battle for the rest of his career to prove something that is not provable, that someone is better than Mike. That's where we're going to have to leave it for now. Big parade in Cleveland tomorrow, but we got another show tomorrow. We got a lot more to talk about, too. We'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Don't forget, Fred McLeod joins Mike Miller on Drive Time next, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We're out of here.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.